Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's call. If you did not receive those charts, please email Linda Spina at lspina@us.ibm.com. Again, that is lspina@us.ibm.com. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Jerry Kazee, Director, IBM Informix Database Development. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and hello, everybody, and welcome to today's chat with the lab. I'm excited about it. It should be a good one. The topic is Cheetah expanding the administration free zone. John Miller will be the speaker, and John's going to take you through some details around some work that we've done in Cheetah around significantly enhancing our admin API, as well as giving you a look at our IDS admin tool that will also be available with Cheetah. So before I turn it over to John, there's just a couple things that I'd like to cover with you. If I can have a couple minutes of your time. First of all, with Cheetah, hopefully you are all aware of the open beta. It was announced February 14th at Linux World. And if you have not had a chance to review any of the press coverage that we had with that announcement, I would encourage you to go out and you know, use your favorite search engine and do some Googling, because there was a significant amount of coverage on that announcement. You know, we have an offering that we're working on with AMD and Novell, and it was announced at Linux World, and you know, there were just a number of news wires and articles that were picked up as a result of that. And it's a continuation of what we call the drum roll of market and press coverage for Cheetah as we move towards the announce and launch in the next few months. So February 14th, we announced our open beta, and I've been really pleased with the response to that. We've had nearly 2,000 downloads since the 14th of February. And we have also have a forum that we're using and encouraging those of you that are participating in the open beta to use to post questions. My team and the support organization both are monitoring that forum, and I think are doing a very good job of taking your questions and researching them if necessary, and then getting responses to those questions back out on that forum. So if you're not using the forum, I would encourage you to. You can also subscribe to that forum, so if there were any postings, you could have them emailed to you directly. So it's an exciting time for us. As an IDS team, it's the first time that we've participated in an open beta, and you know, we're just really excited about the release, and we're excited to see so many of our partners and customers taking it for a test run. So just a couple more things, and I'll turn it over to John. So today John's going to cover the admin API and the admin tool. And then next month, and I believe it's March 14th, and there will be an invitation later that will be available, but next month we're doing a webcast. And the webcast will be, I think the title is Integrated Data Solutions for IoT Using IBM IDS Cheetah. So it's a mouthful. But the point of the webcast is to really introduce what we believe the business value is that you can obtain with the Cheetah release. And so I would encourage you to keep an eye out for that invitation, and I really hope that all of you are able to participate in that webcast next month. So with that, I'll turn it over to John, and I hope you enjoy the discussion. John?
Thank you very much, Jerry. I'd like to welcome you all here today to the talk about the AIDS administration zone here with the Cheetah release. My name is John Miller, and I'm a senior technical staff member with IBM. This is a really exciting topic for me. I really enjoy the administration and running and making things easier, making things work better with our customers. And we'll jump right away into the second slide, titled Administration Free Zone, and just look at some of the goals and messages behind this, to really lower the cost of ownership and deployment. We really tried to get in there and find ways that allow us to, one, make things easier for you, make things easier for business partners, and make things easier for, building applications and total systems with our database. We want it to be scalable and, have the solutions that administer the server not just work for one server, but work for many servers, along with allowing users to customize. Things are great if we provide a solution, but the ability to customize and make things work for you is really, the power behind an integrated solution, making things work in your environment instead of us dictating a solution to you. So that's one of the big things about the open APIs is they provide and make things simple but allow you to customize. Autonomic architecture, we got into the buzzword a little bit there, autonomics. It's not an autonomic solution. We just provided some architecture that allows you to customize and simplify some of those mundane administration tasks that you have to make sure run periodically or every time. And so utilizing the administration API and a database scheduler we'll talk about, we allowed for some autonomic architecture in the solution provided. And really, as been seen by a lot of the IDS customers, is you can get IDS up and running without a lot of work, get it going, and, as the old, set it up and forget about it. Get it going, let it do its thing, come back periodically, check it to, make sure you're doing right. But, it's really an engine that you can really set it and forget it. So, we'll actually go into the third slide now, which, I tried to just depict what's gone on in the Cheetah release in the administration zone. And this slide is just full of titles of features, and it's not all the features because they really didn't all fit on the slide. I kept trying to add things, turn things, move things in there, but it really goes through a lot of the administration features. This isn't all the features of Cheetah. This is just the administration features. And, in an hour, we definitely don't have time to cover all these features. There's a lot of power, a lot of creativity, a lot of things that are going to make the DBAs, business partners, our customers' life simple. But just to give you a feeling for what's gone in there, from lots of different things, and we are going to look at a few of them. So on to slide 4, the overview, really what we're going to drill down and look at is the SQL-based administration commands. We're going to start out looking at some of the framework and some of the things behind the commands. We'll go into some of the improvements in SysMaster, what we've done there to make things easier, more robust. We'll look at some of the SQL history tracing. We'll look at some of the additional dynamic configuration of the different systems. We'll look at the built-in database scheduler. And lastly, we'll take an overview of the IDS admin tool that will be associated with Cheetah. So that's where we're going to go, and we have about 50 minutes to do it in, and so we'll move right into the next slide, laying the foundation. So we're on slide 5 now, laying the foundation. One of the first things you'll notice is when we set up this new administration system, there's actually a new database where a lot of this functionality resides. The new database is called SysAdmin. It is for administrative functions. All the functionality and things that allow you to administer the system are only associated with this database and cannot be executed in other databases. You can use a distributed capability to get to it, but they need to be executed under the context of the SysAdmin database. One of the big things we put in there is the administrative functions, and we'll look at a few of those. There's also an alert system, and this alert system has some basic alerts that can be placed in there, and it's a system that can be extended by customers' applications, by our partners can also use this alert system, so it can be located as a central system. The last component of the SysAdmin database is a data collection system. This collection system allows for some default tasks and sensors to go out and collect data and store that data for analysis. One of the things that Informix does really well is we have an OnStat utility that will show you what the server's doing right now. But oftentimes in performance problems or trying to diagnose problems, people want to know what the server's done last week in comparison to what it's doing now. You know, gee, my server started slowing down last Tuesday. How are the statistics from before last Tuesday and after last Tuesday different? And so we tried to automate that. We have some different methods for collecting information, and we'll go through those. You know, it's basically collecting profile information and storing them away for use. And one of the real major goals in laying this foundation is to make the information and statistics that we have usable and put the information in a way that a DBA can understand it by seeing it. We don't want DBAs having to dig out and go through many different things to figure out, you know, how an SQL statement's running, what resources are consumed by different components. So instead of just laying out some of the information by component, we try and aggregate and put it all together in a view that's easily discernible by our customers, partners, and DBAs. And so that's a common theme in when we went through and laid the foundation for all these improvements. If we move on to slide 6, titled Improving Information for SysMaster and OnStat, we tried to go through, and from what we've heard from a lot of our customers, you know, what are some of the types of information that we wanted to provide? And, you know, when we get into this area, one of the first things that came up is, well, what are my threads waiting on? You know, a lot of times I'll see sleeping forever or different things, and yeah, I really don't know what my threads are waiting on, what resources. So we tried to clear that up and make it visually obvious. Some of the other information is available in one way but not another, you know, via OnStat but not programmatically through SysMaster. So we tried to get a little bit of parity. So such things as checkpoint information. Now get checkpoint information. There's an OnStat option specifically for checkpoint information, and it provides a little bit of history. Similarly, there's a SysMaster table we'll look at in a second that has that. The environment information, you know, what environment variables did different users or the server have set, that's available both in OnStat and SysMaster now. The log files. You now can get the online log and the on-bar log in SysMaster. So you can actually write queries, SQL queries against your online log. And that online log is not stored in the database. We just have a table that views over that log file. One of the big places in SysMasters and in some of the OnStat options was network information. So we tried to improve the network information. This hopefully will fill a big hole that previously existed in our SysMaster database and in some of the OnStats. MGM information. This information was available through OnStat, but really, if you wanted to look at things programmatically, check things out, there was nothing in SysMaster that really lets you know about your parallel queries and what resources and what could be slowing those down. The last two are probably some of the bigger ones. It's surprising, but Informix has many caches. We're always concerned with our data cache, but there are several other caches that we have. Well over 10 other caches. When you look at some of the common ones, the stored procedure cache, the distribution cache, the data dictionary cache, and you can get onto the secondary access methods, primary access methods, things like that. And we never really told you about the performance of those caches. Well, now we have ways of showing you that information. And lastly, SQL statement history. We did a very good job of showing you the statement that runs right now. But if you want to keep track of a history of SQL statements run on your system and how they perform, there was a lot of work someone had to do and build and a lot of infrastructure that needed to be built. And, that's just something that makes tuning SQL very difficult. So we now provide an SQL statement history where you can track and look at the performance and drill down into queries. We'll actually look in detail into that. But again, all this really moves back to a common topic of making the information clear for the DBA to understand. We want to provide this information in a variety of ways, whatever is what you're accustomed to, whether it be OnStat is what you need, whether you need to write a program so you can look at this information and collect it. So that's really where we're going. If we move to the next slide, which is slide 7, new SysMaster tables, just wanted to highlight some of the new SysMaster tables that you will see. There's actually a checkpoint information table which stores the information about the checkpoint and associated statistics with the checkpoint. One of the new features in Cheetah is a non-blocking checkpoint. So while the I.O. is actually occurring, no users are blocked out. While we flush all the buffers to disk, no one is blocked out. We keep track of the different parts of the checkpoint, how long everything takes. Because how checkpoints operate, we actually had to put in timings down near to the hundreds and thousands of a second because things were occurring so quick. So there's a table, and it actually stores information not just about the current checkpoint, but the last 10 checkpoints that occurred. So you can actually see information about, history of checkpoints. The sys thread control block list table, we wanted to add information of why threads are waiting. So that's an existing table that's been added to. We have two environment tables, one per session and one for the server. There's an online log table that looks at your online log file and lets you write queries. We added to the sys session list table to add the memory used by each session. There's a sys network I/O table to provide general network I/O by a database session or user session. The sys dual table is an Oracle compatibility feature. It works like the dual table. The sys SQL cache profile. This displays one row about each of the different caches in the IDS server. Then we have a set of three tables that work together. SQL trace, SQL iterator, SQL trace iterator, and SQL trace info. Those comprise the information about the queries and the history of queries that have been created. They allow you to see a lot of information about the profile information of a query. And we'll look at those in a little more detail. We have a few more network information, some information about global network infrastructure, client type, so you can actually look at how many clients of each specific type and aggregate the information that way. There's the on-bar log activity file, so you can actually look and write programs about how your backups have occurred. And then we added some wait information, you know, in the RSTCB table. How long you've waited on I/O, how much time you've waited on lock, and we'll see examples of those in a little bit. So we really tried to add a lot into SysMaster. But we'll take a look here at one of these changes and what it really means. OnStat G-A-T-H is similar to a PS command, but it's for all our database threads. So it's going to show you all the threads in our server. And when you take a first glimpse of this and look at what's going on, a DBA sees the status of a lot of these threads as just sleeping forever. You know, what does that really mean? Okay, it's sleeping forever. It's not doing anything. But why isn't it doing anything? You know, is it waiting for a resource? What are we waiting on? Can I get more of those if it's a problem? And really, this gave a nice picture, but it really didn't clarify what's going on in the server. And so one of the simple ways we tried to make a DBA's life simpler is by giving you more information behind it. And if we look at slide 9, the improved OnStat G-ATH, one of the things you see is most of the sleeping forevers have gone away. And we really put, it, hopefully in a descriptive way, what's going on. You know, if we look at the first line where we have our thread IDs 2, we come over and look at the status for thread ID 2, and we see that we're IO idle. That process takes and processes IO requests, and it's idle. If we come down to thread 10, our page flusher, and we look at the status, we see he's waiting on I/O. So we know that page cleaner is processing I/O and cannot do any other work until that I/O has completed. So that page cleaner is waiting on I/O. You know, potentially you can break those up, have more of them processing. But that is what that page cleaner is working on. If we go to the bottom line, that's our thread ID 50, our SQL exec, so a user thread. When a user thread would wait on I/O, it would say sleeping forever. And that was just not very descriptive. So we changed the description there. So when your user threads are actually waiting on I/O, it'll say I/O wait. And you will see that in an ATH. And so if you ran an ATH and saw many, many I/O waits, you know, then we might, you know, a DBA could get a clear picture that there could be an issue in performing all the I/O, and we need to address that. Just one of the ways we tried to make things a little clearer, getting in and drilling into what's going on with just a quick snapshot. And again, this is an example of OnStat. this same information was made available in the SysMaster table. So you can actually get at this information not only through OnSAP, but also through SysMaster. Okay, we are going to change directions here and move on to slide 10 and look at the SQL admin commands. That's the title of the next slide. What we tried to do was provide a programmatic way for a user to administer the system. That does not say we're replacing the previous way of using on spaces, on params, on mode, your favorite on utilities. But we realize that people need or want to customize some of the infrastructure that they provide by running commands in programs. And currently, you're limited by the fact that you must run all your administration on the database server. You cannot run any of your administration from a remote server unless you do, you know, log into the other server. So we have created a set of user-defined routines that will allow you to administer the Informix database server. Now, when we started, Informix has a lot of commands and a lot of options, so we tried to start with a finite set, and a finite set that, that covers a large, broad region of common tasks. So one of the first areas we went to was space management. We really took a look at on-params and all the functionality in there and included that. Configuration management, some routine task maintenance, and system validation, such as on-check. And those are the commands that we really went to in our first pass. We didn't get into, in our first pass, the backup and restore commands. So that's one area where, in the future, if we receive a feedback that this is something that people find useful and we should continue, we're looking at moving into several different areas to enhance and make the SQL admin commands more complete. But the benefit is all your administration commands can be run in SQL. Any language that you program in that understands SQL or has an SQL connector, you can now write administration programs in. And you'll actually see an example of that at the end of the presentation here. And it also, since SQL can be run locally on the machine or remotely from a different machine, you now can run all of the administration remotely. Since the administration can be run remotely and execution has occurred, we also provided the ability to track the execution and results of these administration commands. And so you can see who, what, where, when, and why of these commands when they're executed and run. A simple audit log of this is there for you to go back in and look at. Now, when we look at these, we're going to proceed to slide 11, admin commands, two new UDRs. We have two new UDRs, or user-defined routines, that have been added to sysadmin database only. So the UDRs are called task, and the other ones were called admin, and they are part of the sysadministration database. They perform the exact same functionality. If you call one function and execute it with a set of parameters and call the other function and execute it with the same parameters, it will provide the same functionality. The only difference is the return code. One returns a character string that is the status in English, and the other returns a positive-negative return code that indicates either success or failure, and is actually a link into the command history table. So the task command is the one that returns a character string, and when you execute the command, the first argument is an English description of what you want it to do. In the example provided, we're going to execute a function called create DB space. And then we take a set of arguments for create DB space. The first argument is the DB space name and then a path. And this command can actually take additional arguments, but if you, some of them are optional, such as the size. If you don't say a size, we will default to a size. So when you say create DB space, DB space 2, chunks DB space, it executes and returns create a DB space number 2, name DB space 2. If we were to execute that command in the admin function, we provide the same arguments and we return a positive integer meaning success, and that number is 107. And again, the fact that you executed these commands will log a row in the command history table in the sysadmin database. And we will look at that table right now. We're going to slide 12, the SQL admin command, what's available in the tracking. Basically, we provide some information. We have a serial number, which is what the admin command returns to you. That serial number is positive if it's success or negative if it fails. The time that the command was executed, the user that executed the command, the host name that executed it, being that you can actually execute it locally or remote, the command that was executed, the return code of the command, and then a return message. And the return message is what's printed out by the task command. The command gives you an English message return. So that information is saved and tracked for you in the command history table in the sysadmin database. Now, in building admin commands and looking at programming, one of the things we wanted to provide was some flexibility. And a lot of people base path names not off absolute paths, but off some environment variable or some base dir or something like that. So you actually can use environment variables in the commands. The environment variables may only be used in path commands, and they must start the path. And these are environment variables that exist in the server's environment when you start the server, not in the client session executing them. So there are server environment variables. Some of that's for security reasons. The other thing is basically to provide units. When you start getting into gigabytes and even megabytes, it's still getting to be some zeros and gigabytes more. So we actually provide units that you can place on any size or length. So the units are case insensitive. They're, PB, petabyte, terabyte, gigabyte, megabyte, kilobyte, and byte. And you can use those units in any of the commands. They just make things, writing the commands a little easier. And so let's take an example of using these commands. This is on slide 14. We actually say we're going to execute our admin function. We're going to create our DB space, and our DB space is named 2. That's a second argument to the function. And our third argument now is based off the environment variable informixter. It's going to go to wherever the informixter directory is set. It's going to go into the directory space, DB space 2, and it's going to create a DB space that's 20 megabytes. It successfully executes because we get a return of 108, We then select 108 from the command history table, and we look at what was tracked about that command. And there's the information we saw from the command history table. The other thing to note is there's many of these, create DB space is just one command. There's a whole list of these commands in the manual. I think they number 30, 40. I don't remember the exact number, but there's many, many of these commands and options. So now we've kind of looked at administration and the basics behind the administration infrastructure and the fact that you can execute all of on-params, on-mode, a lot of on-spaces. Several of these different commands can all be executed in SQL now, which provides great power and infrastructure to a lot of the things. If you see your servers, if you write a program and you check that your server has some type of deficiency, in that same program you can execute an SQL statement to reconfigure the server. And that's really the power behind a lot of the SQL commands that have been provided. We're actually going to change directions here, change to a different topic here, and move from the admin commands into some of the struggles and some of the information that we've tried to do a little better in providing. So we're on slide 15, the DBA constant struggle. And one of the things in making a DBA's life simpler is really identifying performance bottlenecks in SQL statements. And when we went to look and examine ourselves and listen to feedback from our customers, this was a big area. And, there's the set explain file, and then there was almost a reverse engineering at looking at, objects and what's inefficient about objects, tables, fragments. And from those, finding sequential scans on a table and then looking for those SQL statements. That wasn't a simple process, and it's not repeatable. It's hard to write programs around that type of process, and provided just a lot of work for our users and our business partners. And so we really tried to simplify that information and put it together in a way we felt our users and our partners could take advantage of. And the first thing we did is try and ask ourselves the questions that DBAs like to ask, that people like to ask about a database. This is slide 16. One of the first things is, how long does it take to execute an SQL statement? And that's a simple question. It gets right down to the point of performance. And we really didn't provide a lot of means for our customers to get that question answered. How many resources or how much resources, did this SQL statement take? What are those resources? And, feedback from our customers was, I want to know about disk and memory and CPU by SQL statement. And how long did we take utilizing certain resources, such as disk or locks or a variety of other resources? So in hearing that information and really getting down to it, we tried to build a solution that would take statistics from many layers in our database server and put them together in a single view. So we're actually on slide 17, kind of basically providing this SQL drill down or introspection into an SQL statement. Some of the information, we need to know who executed the statement, what was the database, what was the SQL being executed, the statement execution time. You know, how long did it take? At what date and time was this statement executed? And then we wanted to know, on a per-statement basis, how many pages were read, how many buffers were read, how many were written, what was the sort characteristics of this, what were the lock characteristics, or logging, you know, how much did this statement produce in the logical logs, and then SQL statistics, such as, you know, how many rows were produced, how many rows did the optimizer say, you know, what was the isolation level, what was the PDQ level, a lot of these things. This list, the table on the right, isn't exhaustive, but it's a way of trying to show characteristics in the different layers in our database server, bringing them together at a single point, at a single viewing point, so you can view this information. And this information we want to view through OnStat and SysMaster, so you can write programs or view things right at a command line utility. This feature is dynamically configurable, so you can turn it on and off on the fly. You can turn it on globally. You can turn it on for a set of users. There's a lot of ways to do it. It is disabled by default, so you need to turn it on in order to use it. And provides, you know, tracking at a global level or at a user level. And so we will examine a little bit more on how to use this feature. So we're now on slide 18, controlling SQL query drill down. For those of you who did not get the updated version of the slide, there is a typo on slide 18 and 19. The commands for size say 1024, and it should say 1. Because the size is in kilobytes. I'll go through the controlling the query, drill down or look into. We have one way of configuring it is every time the server starts, you can set an onConfig variable called SQL trace. You can set it to, there's a few parts of that onConfig variable. One is level. And you can set the level to low, medium, or high. Low means we just grab some basic information. Medium means a little more, and high means a little more. And what is traced in each of those levels is in the documentation. The number of traces. So this trace is a circular buffer, and you can trace the last, in our example, we're tracing the last 2,000 SQL statements executed on our server. You can make that statement 200,000. That's fine. I mean, it's just whatever you feel like you want to trace. The size. Each trace buffer, in our example, this is where the mistake was made, the size should equal 1. And that means it's the trace buffer stores 1 kilobyte of data. And what really consumes that is the SQL statement text. So if the DBA can determine what's going on with the first 1K of the statement, you know, maybe a size of 1 is appropriate. If your statements are long and complex and you might need a little more, you can bump that up. And lastly, mode, which is either global or user. And here we show a mode of global. So this will set up the SQL trace for tracing low level of information, 2,000 traces. Each trace buffer will be 1K, and the mode is global. Just doing a little bit of simple math at 2,000 traces and 1K, this is going to take up approximately 2 meg of memory to execute the SQL trace feature. So basically the number of traces times the size provides a very good estimate about the memory for this. Once you turn on tracing with the onConfig statement above, you can actually turn it off by session. and we're going to use the SQL APIs to turn on and off. And this actually shows you disabling tracing for user session 147. So you can execute the task function, set SQL user tracing off for 147. So everyone in the server would be traced except session 147. Going on to slide 19, we also provide, and slide 19, the last argument on the execute function task should say 1, not 1024. So you can dynamically turn on and off the SQL tracing using the task or admin function. You can set SQL tracing on for 2,000 traces and 1 kilobyte each. And then it would the default mode would, there's defaults for the rest of the arguments. So this turns on, again, the same type of tracing that you saw in the onconfig, but this does it dynamically. And if you want to turn the tracing off, you can set SQL tracing off. It turns off the tracing, deallocates all the memory, and you continue along like the tracing was never on. So that's configuring tracing to come on when the server starts up through onconfig and turning it on and off dynamically. If we go to slide 20, the SQL query drill down via OnStat, this is an OnStat G HIS. It's a new OnStat, and it provides the history of the SQL statement. Some of the things you see there is really a lot of the information we talked about. So you see the database that this statement was run against. You see the statement that was executed, the SQL statement. And now you see the iterator slash explain output. So you actually see the query tree. You know, we have two index scans which are run that feed a nested loop join, and that nested loop join feeds a group by. The other thing that's really nice to find out is you have the estimated cost of each iterator. So we can see that for the first index scan, there's an estimated cost of 1, there's an estimated rows of 1, and 1 row was returned. For the second index scan, we see there's an estimated cost of 19, an estimated rows of 545, but only 1 row was returned. And so you can see at each level in the optimizer what is actually estimated and what's actually produced. You get down to some of the statement information. We can see who executed it. It was a select statement. When the statement completed and how long it took to run. And that's running in the database server. And then you get the statement statistics. You actually get to see the read cache rate for this statement. This statement read no pages from disk. It was completely read out of the buffer pool. You get to also, you know, looking, we see the write cache. You know, it didn't write anything, so the cache rate was zero. If we look at the second set of information below, we actually have information about the lock requests, lock waits, how much time you actually spent in this SQL statement waiting for locks. How much log space did this statement take up? How many sorts? How many of those sorts went to disk, and how many of those sorts stayed in memory? Now, really important when looking at performance of SQL statements, if your statement is right on that threshold and starts going from memory to disk, that can make up a big thing. A few aggregated pieces of information, the total number of executions. So if this statement was prepared and re-executed, this would be how many times the statement was executed, the total time executing the statement, the average time per statement execution, and the maximum time for this statement. Now we look at the average I/O wait. This is how long the statement took when waiting on I/O. The total I/O wait time. How much time did this statement take waiting for I/O? And the average number of rows per second being processed by this statement. It gives you a good throughput. And on the last line, we show the estimated cost from the optimizer, the estimated rows, the actual rows, any errors returned by the statement, the isolation level, and how much memory the statement consumed. So we really tried to put in a simple shot a way of a user seeing all the information or a lot of the information about performance and characteristics and resource usage of a statement. And so that hopefully gives the DBAs or partners a view of this information. That really, gives a lot about the query drill down. Now, on to the next feature, the administration, which is slide 21, built-in database scheduler is the title. It's the ability to schedule SQL stored procedures or user-defined routines, stored procedures, Java procedures, a user-defined routine. And so you can actually schedule these statements, procedures, to execute at a specific point in time or interval. We call these entities that you schedule a task. There are different types of tasks, and we'll look at those. The four major ones are task, sensor, startup task, and startup sensors. The task is kind of the parent, and they all have the other ones are just little specialized versions of a task. They are driven by the data inside a table called the PH task. That is a table in the sysadmin database, and that will show you all the scheduled entries that will be executing on your database at regular intervals. A sensor is basically a specialized task that's designed to collect and save information. It's easy to configure. It's easy to add a new sensor. And this allows you to collect profile information, historical information, configuration information, and save it for later use. Because one of our goals when we really set this up, as we talked about in one of the initial slides, is the ability to save that information and analyze it over a period of time. Unlike OnStat, which can only analyze the information right here and now. A task, we kind of talked about this as we're on slide 22, schedulizing the specialized task. A task is meant to provide and execute a specific job at a specific time or interval. A task can execute a single or compound SQL statement, a stored procedure, a CUDR, or a Java UDR. So it's very flexible in what it can provide and execute. A sensor. This is slide 23. A sensor is just a specialized task. And how you actually create a sensor is very simple. It's one insert statement. There's a few built-in hooks that allow you to capture a lot of the information around a sensor. But when we really get down to it, a sensor, you're just inserting a few pieces of data into the PH task table. This sensor is going to collect the onstat-p information every 30 minutes and save the data for 30 days. And how we look at that is we see the first thing we insert in our insert statement is mon profile, which is the name of the sensor, and that needs to be unique. The type of this task is a sensor, so we know we are geared at collecting data. We have groups just to allow you to group similar functions together, and this is just for ease, and this one is type performance. Basically a description or comment about what this sensor is. The table that we're going to place the data into, and that's the MonProf table. If this table doesn't exist, the create table statement that will be used to create the table. So this will roll out all the data from ground zero up to whatever needs to be executed, so it will create the table. And here we're executing an insert statement. We're inserting into Mon profile, selecting a predefined constant, which will be replaced. That's basically the invocation, how many times this select statement will be invocated, the number, the value from sysmaster, shim header, where name is not unused. So this will get us all the onstat-p information. This sensor will start at 6 a.m. and stop at 6 p.m. And the second to the last line, the interval 30 means it will execute every 30 minutes. And the interval 30 day to day says that after 30 days, of collecting this information, we will automatically purge the data out of this table. So this table will keep no more than 30 days worth of data in it, and then it'll purge any data older than that automatically out. The next slide, slide 24, is tasks and sensors, a little bit about what's a task. You know, a task is really a way of ensuring routine jobs get completed. They can not only collect data, but they can check and analyze things, create alerts, post warnings, email you things. You know, a way of a DBA, a partner, a customized application of ensuring things get done on the database on regular scheduled intervals without having to make the DBA remember to do something. You know, three times a day I got to go check my backups and make sure everything completed. Well, now you can create a report, a task that will go out and analyze and send you a report or create an alert if it didn't occur. And a sensor, a simple way of collecting information, keeping around the recent information, purging the old, so you can run trend analysis or look at different things to see why you were performing better last week and not this week. You know, did my data inflow go up? Are my IO rates down? All that type of information. Now, on to slide 25, one of the things that we did is we provided all this infrastructure, and then we actually looked at a new admin console. And this was really an example of a power that this admin console provides. And so we'll go on to slide 26. What is IDS admin? IDS admin is a web-based administration tool for the IDS Informix dynamic server. It's set up for the Cheetah release. It is a completely SQL-based server. It has no pieces installed whatsoever on the database server. We only use the infrastructure we talked about. We use a Sysmaster database, a sysadmin database, and it really allows you to get at your database servers just through the SQL infrastructure provided. And so you install it once on a web server, and then you can tell it about different database servers you have. And from that one web server, you can administer multiple IDS servers. On slide 27, just to give you a little bit of a highlight, this is kind of the, you know, walking into the product. You can, you know, set up, and you can basically it'll show you where all your servers are. It shows you green balloons for the servers that are online. It shows you red for the ones that are down. It has a little balloon. You can highlight over one of the balloons, and a little message will come up giving you the kind of quick status of the server. It shows you the one that you're currently administering, that's set up as your current server to do operations on. And so that's just walking into the tool. This tool we're working on, it's all PHP-based. It uses a lot of the power of what's out there already, along with the SQL admin API infrastructure. If we move to the slide 28, you can actually see the query drill down feature that we looked at with OnStatG HIS, but now it's put in a graphical tool. The iterator tree, again, looking at from the bottom up, has two scans, a join, and a group by. And so it's just, you can graphically see the tree. You get to see the different rows that have gone through. You see the statements. You see all the statistics. And it's in a graphical representation. Just trying to give you a few highlights of this graphical tool. The next slide, overview of disk space. You can go into the overview, and it provides you your used and free, how much of your data spaces are used and free, temp spaces and blob spaces. At the bottom of that screen, you can go ahead and create a new DB space. It gives you the information there. If you want to administer a specific DB space, looks to be empty or full, and you need to add a chunk, you can click on the individual ones and go in and administer and view and find out a lot of the details, from extents to you know, an on-check PE. You can look at adding chunks, dropping chunks, changing characteristics. There is slide 30, the process usage. You can actually see your different virtual processors and how they're performing. And there's many, many different features in this tool, in the admin tool. It's been demoed at a variety of places, so maybe you've seen it before. But it hopefully it'll provide a way that you can see how this infrastructure is used, utilize it, adapt it, enhance it, make it for what you need. There's a lot of features in it. You know, there's a help infrastructure. There's a report system. There's a there's a module report builder, so you can say, you know, I want these different functions and I want them put into a report. It'll do all that for you. There's a lot of different functionality. There's a help system. You can customize it. The ability to adapt it to different languages is there. So that really, you know, then we go on to slide 31, which is what we started off with, that this administration area has been a really full-featured, rich area for us. A lot of different things have gone into it. And so I would really like to, you know, have you think of some questions here. I'm willing to take questions as time permits. But I believe first, Millicent, are you on now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm ready to hand it over to you for the poll, and then
okay.
We'll move on from there.
All right. At this time, we'll conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. There will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. Question one. The level of detail in this presentation was star 1, about right, star 2, not technical enough, or star 3, too technical. Again, question 1. The level of detail in this presentation was star 1, about right, star 2, not technical enough, or star 3, too technical. Question 2. The speakers for this teleconference were star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, and star 4 poor. Again, question 2. The speakers for this teleconference were star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, or star 4 poor. Question 3. Overall teleconference rating. Star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, or star 4 poor. Again, question 3. Overall teleconference rating. Star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, or star 4 poor. And our last question, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10 or Cheetah? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10 or Cheetah? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. And now we'll move on to our question and answer session. If you do wish to signal for a question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this time. Again, it is star 1 to signal for a question. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. Again, star 1 for any questions, and we'll pause momentarily. Our first question comes from Newell Rice. Please go ahead.
Hey, John. I really appreciate the body of work you've done today. I want to say thank you for that and have a question about your SQL tracing functionality. Well, actually, three. Will this trace stored procedure execution? And then what kind of performance hit might we see with this on? The types of statements that are being traced, does that include, you know, create table, drop table, create index? And then will we have a configuration where we can say what types of statements we trace? So let's say I only care about tracing selects and updates and don't care about deletes and inserts.
Okay. Thanks, Newell. Let's see. Stored procedure execution. Yes, it will track the overall execution of the stored procedure, and it will track individual statements executed in the stored procedure. We had to make a little bit of a compromise when tracking the individual statements executed in a stored procedure. We don't actually print the text of the statement when executing a stored procedure, a statement inside a stored procedure, because we don't have it. So it was a large performance penalty to go look it up. But we do tell you the procedure name that's executing it and the type of statement. If you put on high mode tracing, you can actually get a stack trace. So if procedure 1 calls procedure 2, calls procedure 3, you can actually see the calls of those procedures to get, you know, the invocation path of it. But we do provide that it was a select in this procedure and then all the statistics. And so if you have a procedure that executes two inserts and one select, you will actually have four trace items, one for the overall procedure call and then one for each SQL statement inside the procedure.
Thank you.
And then I think you asked about overhead.
Yeah.
That is some of the reasons why the low, medium, and high, we actually geared it more for performance, and that's why you have the buffers of a pre-allocated size. So there is no memory allocation. There's nothing like that going on. It's strictly a collecting numeric information with a, you know, we have to do a string copy to get the statement and a few pieces of string along with it. So it's a little bit more, you know, if you say it's going to hit you anywhere, it's going to take up a little bit of CPU cycles. So if you're at 100% used and you have no CPU cycles, it's going to hit you harder. If you're at a, you know, a machine that's running at 75% and you have 25% idle, it's going to hit you a lot less and probably not be noticed that much. We did some tests on those, and they showed great results. We did some tests when you're at, you know, 95, 98% capacity, and it hits you harder. So to give you an exact number is really hard. But we did create the low, medium, and high. And the low is more statistical. The medium gives you a good middle ground. The high does a lot more of, you know, getting stack traces and getting a lot of English descriptions for different things. Did I cover them all, Newell, or was there...
The statement types, if it...
The statement types. Right now, it does do all statement types. You know, we'll see where people want it to go and how we can go, and I'm sure we can adapt things in the future, but we thought we'd start off with really all statement types, and including create tables, create indexes, drop tables, you know, set roles. Any SQL statement is traced.
Great. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Christopher Coleman. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. My question is for the tracking of the command history table. Does that also check and record for the onstat on-check commands as well, or only the ones that are executed through the UDRs?
Currently, it is only the commands executed through the UDRs. You know, when we were looking at it, we made a few decisions and didn't know if we should impose it upon the historic methods because people weren't used to that, or only the new methods, because one thing the new methods does expose is the ability to execute things outside of the current server. So currently it is only the two admin and task UDRs.
Okay.
Zach Klotman, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello. First, thank you for a nice presentation. You've shown lots of nice things. I've got actually a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, in the SQL query drill down, there's over there a listing on total executions, an average time, and a max time. Now, when you try to correlate the max time, I don't see any max rows or something like that. So I cannot find from this screen whether the max time actually is because of something that's wrong or it's something that actually should be that way because this particular query actually returns 200 million rows. Versus a different one which only returned two rows, a different set of parameters. Is there a way to get to do this correlation?
There is. That correlation is not done for you, but you could use the, because you have a history of these statements, and it's in SQL, you can pull up all, in fact, in the graphical tool, this is something we do for you, and one of the reasons why it's called Query Drill Down is the first screen shows you by statement type information. And then you can pick select and drill down and see all the different instances, all the unique statements. Pick one unique statement and then see information about each execution. So It's not done for you directly, but you can use the history trace and the fact that you can write SQL that does group bys and all that to build up a lot of those correlations. And in the graphical admin, that is done for you, and you can see all that right away.
Okay, thank you. That's number one. Number two, currently there is, in Formix 10, there's no real way to clear up all the caches, especially when we change all kinds of things. Is there a way to do that in Cheetah?
Which caches specifically?
Stored procedures, SQL statements, types, whatever.
Yeah, you can't clear those out.
You cannot, no.
Because you can't drop a procedure until all references of those procedures. So just because someone changes a parameter, changes a procedure, there can be references or open prepared statements that have that procedure in use. So it's not just because someone changes something, you can say, okay, I can clear that cache out. Not like a data cache. A data cache, as long as no one has that buffer pinned, you can clear it out. It's easy to do. Those SQL caches, people often prepare statements up front and hold handles around to them for, you know, for long periods of time.
So basically, whenever I want to change a stored procedure, then I actually have to restart my database because there's no way to actually introduce a stored procedure with a different set of parameters with the same name without... And, I mean, there is no way to actually do it.
With a different set of parameters there is, because there's a signature. The signature has to be unique. And so you can have a, in fact, task is a great example of that. There's a task UDR that takes one parameter, two parameters, three parameters, four parameters, and they're each unique. But we do not version procedures. And that's what it would take, because if I am using a procedure called Frank and I want to create a new procedure called Frank and both of them take an integer, if I have existing users using that procedure, I can't just tell those users they can't use it.
On the other hand, you cannot fix a bug that you discovered in that procedure without bringing down your system.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. That is something we don't do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Alexei Sonkin. Your line is open.
Hi, John. Thank you for a great presentation. My question is about non-blocking checkpoints. Will non-blocking checkpoints affect HDR checkpoints, or it's only for standalone database?
It, I believe, is for both. I can check back and get back to you on that. I wasn't. My belief is it actually does both, because the synchronization point is. Let me check one thing. I'll have to get back to you with an answer on that, Alexei.
Oh, thank you, John.
We'll go next to Anatole Vishon. Your line is open.
Hey, John. Great presentation. Quick question. The sensors that you were describing and the tasks execution, is there a way to set up essentially a trigger event when the sensor reaches a particular watermark? That predefined task that's been written into this new admin functionality can be triggered based on that threshold?
Yes, Anatole. There's actually a couple different ways to do that. There's actually a threshold table as part of this. You can create triggers and limits and different things based on different actions. It was kind of hard to go into that completely in the talk here, but yes, there is a lot of infrastructure to do that.
Okay, and are there cascades or branching in terms of the execution? No offhand?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, John.
Our next question comes from Andre Remenchuk. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello, John. My question is about collecting data by sensors. Mm-hmm. From what I see on the slide, I'm responsible for providing my own table to store that data. And yet you mentioned that the engine will take care of automatically purging the old data. How is that accomplished? I mean,
well, in the sensor, in the slide there, you provided the schema
mm-hmm.
for the table to be created, and the database will create that table. When you run a sensor, there's actually another table called the pH run table that keeps track of each invocation of that sensor.
Mm-hmm.
What time is associated with that data. And it will go out and purge that table based on that sequence ID that was that kind of dollar sign
mm-hmm.
variable that it puts in. And so it knows the run table. If you put in that sequence ID, it will go ahead and purge that.
Okay.
So it uses that sequence ID, and if you don't put in that sequence ID, it doesn't know how to get at it.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Thank you. That's the hook. Basically, this pH run table tells when each invocation of the data was collected. Any invocations that are older than your interval will get removed.
Don Wolford, please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Good presentation, John. Wanted to ask about security for all of this trace data. We've got a whole bunch of potentially sensitive data being traced, including, in the case of prepared SQL, are we tracing the values? And what security controls, if any, exist to protect this trace data?
A great question. One of the things we did, and that's one of the reasons the ONSTAT applies by the same ONSTAT rules, which is, there's an environment variable that you can lock down ONSTAT. ONSTAT today does track host variables. I don't know if you're aware of that. You can actually, it'll print out host variables if you run it as user informix.
Yes, I do know that.
Okay, and that's, similarly, that's true for the ONSTAT G history output. It only does that if you're user informix. In the SIS master database, we did employ a little bit of difference on some of these new tables. They are, by default, only have access to informix. And you need to grant access to other users if you want other users to view that data. So this... we didn't go change the old tables and break things, but some of these new tables only have access as user informix, and you'd have to use the SQL grant syntax to grant others access to them. Also, in the sysadmin database, there are, by default, the only user that can connect to that database is informix. Root can't even connect to that database. So you have to be informix to get into the sysadmin database. You can grant others access to that database, but only root by default. Now, you can run, grant connect to public if you want. The UDRs do check for only root, informix, and the DBSA, to execute the administration functions. So only those users, even if you can get into the database, only those users can execute the administration functions.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure, Don.
And we'll go now to Dave Griffin.
Hey, John.
Hey, Dave.
Two-part question regarding the sysadmin database. First of all, I'm making the presumption that it will automatically be created in the rootDB space when you initialize or upgrade. So question one is, can the sysadmin tables be moved to a different DB space? And part two is, with the statement history capture and stuff, if we know that we have a million statements an hour being executed on a database, can we make a gauge of how big the sysadmin database will get? Thank you.
Okay. Two things, Dave. The answer to your first question is, yes, the tables can be moved, and yes, the database can be moved. We are actually coming out with a, it's not in the open beta, but it's coming in as a bug fix because our previous beta customers had requested it. There will be an administration command through the SQL API to actually reset the database and move, it'll automatically reinitialize the database into a different DB space. Because it comes up and is created on an IY, there is only one database, only one DB space, so it has to go in root. But subsequently, you can create your DB spaces and then say reset database and move it to results, and it'll automatically delete everything and put it in the new DB space you say. It will not move existing data in that database, but just reinitialize it in the new DB space. Second, the history trace is only an in-memory history trace. It does not store anything on disk. So when you say, I want to trace the last 1,000 or 500, you are setting up a memory buffer to save those last set of SQL statements, and that's what it operates on. You can, however, set a collection job up to save that data to permanent tables, set up a sensor to do that. But it only goes in memory. In our initial open beta release, I think we were a little too aggressive in collecting data. So we are fine-tuning that a little bit better and a little more with some of our default sensors. Does that get your questions, Dave?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Eric Herber.
Hi, John. This is Eric.
Thank you, Eric,
very much for the presentation. I have a small question regarding the new UDASK task and admin. Is there a possibility to create those tasks via a graphical interface? Is there something planned for the IDS admin tool?
I need a little. The IDS admin calls those UDRs when it executes create DB space, create chunk, drop chunk, add more processes or add more VPs, do checkpoints, move the physical log. So in the graphical interface, it does execute all those, it does execute the task and admin UDRs to accomplish that.
But is there a possibility to create these tasks via a graphical interface, Yes, it's the task itself.
That is something we are looking at. We currently display a lot of information about the tasks and their schedules, but we don't allow modification of them through it yet.
Okay.
But that is a something that we've looked at. It just had to start with first things first.
Okay, thank you.
I think we're running about out of time, aren't we, Millicent?
Yes, we are. That was our last question.
Okay. So that probably works well. So we have no more on the line right now?
No, sir. No other questions. Okay. Standing by.
Well, I guess I'd like to close down, Millicent, and I'd like to thank everyone for attending. Hope it was useful information and get you excited about Cheetah. Again, I'd really encourage you to look at the open beta. It started on February 14th. Several people have downloaded the software and have given it a trial run. There's also the Cheetah Forum out there. You can Google Cheetah Forum, Formix Cheetah Forum. It'll link you right to it. So there's really exciting things happening, and you know, attending these talks, I think, is a good way for Informix and a good way for our customers to get a quick and a really powerful message across. So, you know, I really need to thank Linda for all her work and effort in arranging and getting these things done, and encouraging us to do them and encouraging you guys to attend. So a big thanks to Linda. If you have any questions, please send them either to Linda and myself. We'll try and get them out there and get them returned to you. I do owe a question about the HDR and information there, so I will get that out and get a response back. So again, thank you, everyone. Hope you have a great day or evening or morning, wherever you're located, and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you for your participation, everyone, on today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.